Welcome to this audio presentation of the Pulitzer Historic Audio Archives. In this audio you will listen to the actual planning sessions of what became known as Q-Codes. The Scan Commerce and Scan Connect platform was integrated into the Yellow Pages and in college textbooks, making history as the first interactive Yellow Page directories and interactive textbooks. This historic audio archive provides insight into what it takes to introduce a brand new technology. This program was recorded in the year 2000 and was just before the huge dot-com market crash. Although the company Digital Convergence did not survive the dot-com crash, the technology survived and scanning Q-codes to connect is now commonplace.
Hey folks, Jovan here, Chairman, CEO, Digital Convergence with another wrap session. I do these so it gives you an opportunity to learn about some of the key people in the organization, some of the people that make this wonderful company of Digital Convergence go round. Now, the topic of this one is a little bit different than what you've heard from me in the past. I get asked all the time, where's the future of the company headed? Where are we really going to build our strength in the future? Now, as you know, you've heard a tremendous amount about what I call the sexy side of our business. Now, the sexy side of our business is the stuff where you're going to see CRQ or QCAT on television, in Forbes magazine, in Parade magazine, NBC, all the great, wonderful, sexy entertainment things to do. Face it, that's sexy. I mean, it's not often that products get to be incorporated into the entertainment and educational means and methods within our life. However, even though that's critical to our business and what we're doing in that side of the business is ushering an old industry, an old traditional industry of like media and or publishing, and we're ushering it into, dragging it per se, into the internet era. Now that's a little different scenario for us because although we license our technology to the television stations and the print stations, it's really driven by just getting them to adopt the technology and getting them to incorporate it and getting our software and our QCATs out to the American public. But if you follow that line, then you have to ask yourself a question. Is once we become fully infiltrated within the media, we're everywhere in the media, everything you read, everything you watch, everything you hear, where do we go? What do we do as a corporation? Now, granted, America, broadcasters, advertisers, brand companies, etc., will be buying cues, our technology. That's one form of it. But how do we sustain long-term growth? How do we become a powerful corporation? How do we have deep dollars inside the corporation and prove that besides a marketing powerhouse, that we can also be a financial powerhouse? Well, I believe the responsibility of that mission lies in the group that we're going to talk about today, and that's the Business and Consumer Group. Now, the Business and Consumer Group, we're going to explain to you on this tape because I think it's very important you understand that half of the business. Why is that? Well, sometimes it doesn't get a lot of attention. Well, because it's not sexy. It's not like walking in and doing People magazine and we're on the cover of People magazine or something like that. Now, that's sexy. I like that myself. You like talking about it. It's great to brag about. Or would you rather hear about, hey, I've spent the last 3 months talking to the marketing manager at this insurance company and they're really excited. That doesn't have a lot of sizzle. It's not as, should we say, fiery as saying, hey, I met with Steven Spielberg last week and he says we're going to change the world. We all remember that one. But look, think about changing the world, because part of changing the world is having our technology not only out there for America who knows what it is and in the media companies, it's about having it inside every corporation in America. It's about making corporations embrace our technology to perform better, not only for their employees or their performance in the marketplace, but also the financial marketplace as well. And our technology is a key to that. And I want to explain that side of the business to you, and that's why I'm doing this tape. Because when you understand the Business and Consumer Group of Digital Convergence, you will understand what will help us become one of the largest corporations, to become our dreams in the future. So joining me today on this tape is Blaine Thacker. Now, Blaine Thacker is the president of the Business and Consumer Group. And then we have Bill Doucette, who's the senior vice president of Business and Consumer Group. Now, both of these individuals are located at our home office in Dallas, Texas. And for those of you that don't know, Digital Convergence is a Texas company. The company is set up in the following way. The home office, the heartbeat, the place where everything operates, the place where everything you do in the field gets serviced, gets created, gets put out to the field, and gets managed, is in Dallas, Texas. And then we have an international office, which is in London. That's obvious. What does it do? International work. And then, of course, you have the media center of the corporation being in New York City. And it's important that it's there to handle television and broadcasting and publishing, because that's where all the publishing ad agencies, broadcasting and everything like that are located. And of course, that is the home of our president, Michael Guerin, president, COO, and he helps manage that process besides the corporation, and then deals in the real time with Wall Street. Wall Street's in New York, folks. We need a presence in New York. So you understand that. You have the home office in Dallas, Texas, the media part of the company, and publishing groups in New York, and then, of course, the international group in London. So now we're going to talk about the core. Now, Blaine Thacker, if you haven't met him, here's how I can set up Blaine Thacker. I sat down one day when I was doing this company, and somebody told me, as I was putting it together and writing the business plans and speaking, they said, you know, you really have some incredible bits of wisdom. Because I learned a philosophy that said, you know, I play to win. That's what we're here to do. That one flower does not a spring make, meaning just because you do one thing good doesn't mean you're the entire season. It means you have to keep on performing time and time again. And learning that you're only as good as your last success, and you can't ride on those successes very long. You have to keep on performing. Well, when I looked at that, and I looked at my philosophy of doing business and surrounding myself with certain types of people, I learned a philosophy a long time ago that business is kind of like war. I mean that in the best of intentions when I say it. It is a war out there. We're going through the war right now, but it's a type of war that means we're all in the foxhole together. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, just, you know, think about military movies. Think about, think about the fact that soldiers dig foxholes, and that's where they jump down in when the mortar's coming in and you're shooting out and the enemy's trying to shoot you and you're a little hole in the ground, and all these guys are muddy and beaten up and bruised and bleeding, and they're all down in the same hole. And as the enemy troops zero in, you know, you have to be willing to protect yourself from all directions. Yeah, it's kind of Saving Private Ryan right now. It's kind of saving our rears, because we all have to fight together. And going to war with each other means that when you turn your back, the guy next to you is protecting your back to make sure you don't get it in the back. Well, when I got to looking at some of those philosophies I learned about business, I started trying to think, where did they come from? And where they came from was a man that I met when I was 18 years old. And he came in and to a little bitty company that I was working for, and I was in sales, and bought the company, took me under his wing, put me on the road, put me inside some of the largest corporations in the world, doing training and development and consulting with these companies. And it is what taught me how to think like I think. It's not very often that you meet somebody in life that actually can change your life so much that it is the most significant foundation you have, that you can say, this is why I am what I am. Well, why I am what I am is because of Blaine Thacker. And the theories and philosophies I have is because of Blaine Thacker. I would say that I am just a recut of Blaine Thacker, but then that would say Blaine Thacker's kind of a jerk sometime, and that's only attributed to me. But Blaine Thacker taught me so much in my life that, you know what, if you want to go back and look in time, if it wasn't for when I was 18 years old, this man who was coming right out of corporate America and the AT&T's of the world, seeing maybe a little bit of spark in a very, very, very rough piece of coal that hopefully later in life would become a diamond. This is the man that took me under his wing and taught me more than any one individual in my life. I'm glad to have him here today. I'm glad you're in the corporation, Thacker. And so, Blaine, in a nutshell, why don't you explain to everybody what the business and consumer group is? But before you do that, I think it's very important they understand where you come from and your background and the experience you bring to our company.
Well, thanks, Jovan. I appreciate the words. My background is basically 30 years in information technology, starting out with AT&T, going to General Electric, working with Oracle, working with British Telecom, learning the information world, but basically serving in what I call the sales and marketing arena. I left BT from that perspective and went into doing a couple of startups in terms of CLEC down in Austin, Texas, and then also to an ISP in Phoenix. I was talking with my troops today about the most exciting job I had prior to coming to Digital Convergence, and that was basically the challenge that I had to develop and implement the Bell marketing system for AT&T back in the late 70s, early 80s. That gave me a challenge that I really enjoyed and I had a lot of fun doing, but it's nothing like what we're doing here today at Digital Convergence. As Jovan pointed out, I think it's important to understand that our side of the business, the business and consumer group, is not the sexy side, but it's what I call the concrete and the mortar side in terms of building the really what I call the major revenue impacts on the company itself. We've done our job in what I call phase one, phase two of the business. Phase one, I call and illustrate it as the distribution phase, in which we built our distribution channel. We've taken our technology out to the advertising, the publishing, and the broadcasting worlds to see if those industries would embrace our technology, which they have in a very positive way.
So the distribution channels, Blaine, is like, let's just take Forbes. Forbes, there's 850,000 subscribers. They're getting RQCats. Wired, 450,000 subscribers. They're getting RQCats. Those are what you're calling tying up the distribution channels, the Radio Shacks, and those of the world, correct?
That's correct. It's what I call the push side of our strategy, is that we're pushing our technology and our capabilities, if you will, out to the marketplace through some major players like Forbes, like Wired, like NBC, et cetera. We're introducing the technology, and we're actually getting them to embrace it, if you will, and to provide that opportunity for the real world, the consumer world, to use our technology on a day-to-day basis. That, to me, was phase one. And I think we've done an outstanding job there, thankfully, for the people like Michael Guerin and Scott Carlin and all the players out of that.
Don Welsh and Larry Olson,
exactly.
And just Eric Raymond and all these guys just left and right. I mean, they're out there humping it. And that's exactly what it's called, all day long, getting these distribution vehicles tied up. I mean, what better credibility for our technology? Because it's important for credibility than, you know, if you cut a deal with something like a Wall Street Journal, you know, and get them to send out our technology and have the best publishers and broadcasters in the world say, this is not only good, it's so good we're putting our name on it. So that's the success that they've had. But Thacker, what's next?
Well, from that standpoint, after phase one, which I think we've done an outstanding job in doing. In fact, this week we just recently met with Pfizer in New York for the first time. And one of the comments they made to me as I was leaving was that, you know, we really, really like the technology. We see all kinds of ways of using it from an application standpoint. But what really impressed us here, Blaine, was the fact of the distribution partners that you had, like NBC, like Radio Shack, et cetera. So I think it was important to get that piece in place.
Now, Pfizer. How big is Pfizer? Pfizer is all pharmaceuticals, right? Is Pfizer pharmaceuticals?
Right.
Right? How big of a corporation is Pfizer? I mean, it's like billions, right? I mean, we're not talking a small corporation. We're talking a massive corporation.
Well, it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest. The biggest two pharmaceuticals are Pfizer and Merck in terms of distribution of pharmaceuticals.
And so these are the people like that supply like Dave Matthews with his Viagra and stuff like that, right?
Exactly. In fact, Laura, I think Dave has a direct email to Pfizer. But once we've done that, and I think we've done an outstanding job of doing that. I've been very pleased to see what we've been able to accomplish in that area, thanks to the people that have led that charge within the company. And now it comes down to what I call where the rubber meets the road, and that is in terms of how we implement our technology to make sure that it actually is deployed in the marketplace and is accepted by the people, what I call the consumer base throughout America. that implementation phase includes the introduction and the education of the public, as well as establishing what I call our footprint in the marketplace.
Now, would that be, let me see if I've got this right. We already now know what the distribution phase is, and now the education phase. Would that be like all the stuff that we're doing where we've got print ads going, and we've got a television campaign where you'll see us like on CNBC and Comedy Central and Lifetime, Discovery, the Learning Channel, and all these channels, and then we actually get America using it? Is that the phase you're describing?
Exactly. If, you know, this is where the really, when I said the rubber meets the road, this is when we know we've got a definite go in the marketplace. You know, distribution channel's been established. We're able to get to the marketplace. And when the market buys in from a consumer perspective, then we know we've got a definite go for the company. So that's the reason everybody in the company at this point in time needs to focus on that, what we call the launch, starting in Dallas, Texas.
Now, I know you actually have four phases. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And we've talked about two, but before we go on to the other two, you know, I mentioned Bill Doucette, Senior VP of the Business and Consumer Group. As every general like Thacker, I call him Thacker, by the way, folks. You can call him Blaine. He's been called worse. And every general has his second in command. And Bill, you're second in command. I think it's important because a lot of people don't see you. And the reason they don't see you is a good reason. It's because you're locking yourself down, munching these numbers, and creating these proposals and plans for our corporation. And it's not about you're going to go meet the sexy producers and writers and all these other ones. I mean, you do a tremendous amount of lockdown work and brain power work first. Tell everybody about your background first, and then tell us about what you do on a daily basis.
Sure. My background's quite a lot like Blaine's. I grew up in corporate America after about 25 to 28 years or so. Went through AT&T, Contel, British Telecom, and I went into the energy industry. I was in the financial services industry. But what I learned along the way is that business is not really about technology or energy or selling services. It's really about money. And over the years, I kind of evolved from being...
What a concept. Money?
Well, yeah, it's really about cash.
You mean we're supposed to make money at this and not just give everything away?
Well, the good news is that sometime around March 10th, to be exact, when the internet market melted down and everybody started to realize what the internet was really about was also making money, not just a lot of hype. And a lot of those companies are starting to fade away, and obviously their stocks have faded away. My view is if we can figure out how to take our technology, not give it away, but sell it in the marketplace through applications that make money for the customer as well as money for us, that's just my stock and trade and how I've done it for 20 years.
Now, let me just ask both of you an interesting question. We're going to kind of get off the subject just one half of a heartbeat before we go back and learn more about the rest of the phases and the plans for your department and group. Thacker, I'll ask you first. The day you realize we have been a mega success, what is that event that you will judge us by to say we made it? Like for me, like one of my lifelong dreams ever since I was very young was I wanted to be on the cover of Forbes magazine. So I can say the day I make the cover of Forbes magazine is the day I can say one of them that I made it. I accomplished something. Now, Thacker, what would you say for our company and technology? What would be one of the things, just one of the milestones that you can say we've done it?
That's real easy for me, Jovan, and that is what I call Operation Lockup. When I've got the 15 industries, the top players, the market leaders in each of the 15 industries that we're approaching.
What are the 15 industries? What is that?
Insurance, finance, transportation, government, healthcare, manufacturing.
I get it.
Okay. When I have an Operation Lockup talks about being able to go out and get the top two or three players in each of those specific industries to contract with us, not just say it's interesting technology, but to contract with us to use our technology, that's when I know we've made it. That's when I'll celebrate, quite frankly, because that's my goal to make sure that this corporation is able to achieve what I think it's able to achieve.
Now, Bill, what would be – can't use the same one. See, it's harder going second than it is going first. Bill, what would you say, hey, we made it, we're doing this right? What would be some of those landmarks for you?
Oh, I got one big landmark, and it's real simple, and it gets back to cash. When our stock hits $100 bucks. we've made it.
That's a very good one to say. Of course, there's absolutely no promises in what we do. I mean, we're all trying to get there, but that's a good goal to have. That's a very good goal to have.
Well, I can tell you, I've told a lot of people in this business, I didn't come here for just an IPO. I didn't come here to make $10 off the share price. I believe we've got the value in this business. We've got a technology that can be $100 up stock. And when we hit $100 and we stay above $100, I know we've made it.
You know, there's not a lot of corporations out there that necessarily do that for long term. And I would say if here we are in our launch, we all do everything we need to do and we get all of our dreams met, just getting to where we want to go, that would be a good one to have on a list to measure this corporation by. I actually like that one. So, Blaine, let's go on. So now we've covered distribution. Now we've covered what you call the education part of it. You said it's the first part of it, though, you said it's pushing it. Explain what you mean by it's pushing the technology out there.
Well, what I mean by that is that we as a company are actually forcing our technology, if you will, on not only on the distribution channel, but through the distribution channel to the marketplace. All right? That's phase one, phase two. Phase three and four is what I call creates the pull of our technology and the pull of our ability to enable companies to use our technology. And we pull that from the market. That's the consumers themselves saying, we want to use this technology. That's the corporations themselves, like Ford, like General Motors, like Citibank, like Pfizer, that are saying, we want to use this technology not only for advertising, which to me, advertising is just the tip of the iceberg, but not only do we want to use it for advertising for marketing purposes within the company, more importantly, we want to use what I call the B2B applications utilizing our technology.
And of course, for all the people that are listening, B2B is just the abbreviated term for business to business, meaning corporations selling to other corporations.
Right. To me, in phase three, where we're actually creating the business to consumer piece, the pull through, we're going to use what I call simple applications, advertising applications, the ones that anybody can name off the top of their head. When you start getting into phase four, where you get into business to business applications, that's where really I think the major dollars are going to be made in terms, and more importantly, the complex applications. For example, Bill can talk to you about his recent conversations with American Airlines here in Dallas, and how they'll use queues from a maintenance standpoint with airplanes, putting a queue on every airline part. Every airplane part, in order to use our technology, for example, with Pfizer and how they're going to be using it.
You know, that's an interesting point, because all this time we've talked about, you know, everybody's gotten excited about, hey, there's a queue, you know, our printed code in a magazine or in the Dallas Morning News or something like that, and we get excited about it because that's all you see around the office, and then you see it on TV, it's great, but you never think about the fact of corporations consuming these. And you know, it's easy to understand a company as ours because we're a razor blade company. You know, we're giving out the razors, and the razor blades are queues. You know, we wanted just people to keep on consuming queues, businesses and corporations, and that's easy to understand. You know, it's $200, and hey, if you sell 1,000, you know, it's easy to do the math. But you never think about a corporation consuming queues inside the corporation. And then, you know, geez, I would think if Compaq gave a queue to every one of their employees and they just put one on the business card for each employee, that's 53,000 queues. Bill, explain the business side and the business consumption of these.
Well, you'd be surprised how quickly you can eat up queues on the business side. For example, we've been doing some business or trying to do some business with Metropolitan Life, and we would sell them 2.9 million queues, which is putting a queue on the back of their insurance cards that they distribute to all their policyholders.
Now, why would someone, and I'm only playing dumb because I'm hosting this, why would someone want to put a queue on the back of their health card?
Well, I've got a little experience in that industry because when I was at AT&T, I managed an account in that industry. But what we found out then and was still true today, because we validated that with Metropolitan, is servicing the policyholders is one of the most expensive parts of their business. And we start to look into their call centers and realize that they were spending supporting their...
So how does an insurance company service a policyholder? What do you mean?
Well, we've all kind of done it. You look on the back of a card, you need some information, you dial an 800 number, you work your way through the auto attendant once, you work your way through the auto attendant twice, and maybe three times, you finally get to a thing that
says, please hold, your call will be answered in 14 days and 3 hours.
There you have it. And if you're a guy like me, you hang up and you're disgusted, and then if you're some other people that are a tad more patient than me, you actually wait for those 14 days, and you get to a human being and you say, look, I need to know where this claim is, and they say, oh, well, that's all right, we just sent a check out yesterday. Instead of being happy.
The check's in the mail.
The check's
Isn't that
in
one
the
of
mail.
The three golden lies? The check's in the mail and I... Okay, anyway.
There you go. No, I will, and I respect you now, not only tomorrow morning. But the truth is, instead of being happy to hear that my check was cut yesterday, I'm pretty disgusted because it's taken me 20 minutes to get through. What we're able to do for a simple question like that, and it turns out, according to Metropolitan, 60% of the calls into a service center, and there are 4.7 million calls going into the service center a year, 60% of those are simple information calls that they can get if they could put a queue on the back of their insurance card, scan it, go right to their page at Metropolitan, put in a PIN to make sure it's the right person, and get their information effortlessly. Without any effort.
Unlike you butchering that word.
There you go.
Effortlessly.
I'm learning English, and pretty soon I'll get a handle on it. But and I'm calling them repless. And what I mean by repless is there's no rep involved, a representative involved. It's all done, driven by our technology.
So if I understood this transaction, I'm a MetLife customer, right?
Right.
I got a card. On my health card, because we've all done this, on my health card, there's a queue.
Correct.
Got a cat. Swipe the queue. Up pops the website. Similar to my ATM machine, which asks me my code. I won't give you my code, but I'll give you Blaine's 1289. put in your PIN, hit submit, and all of a sudden, it's my page. It says, hey, it's Jovan.
You got it.
And what it has is information about my account, information about what claims or whatever, you know, when am I going to get my money back for my braces or my discount or whatever the case may be, and how much of my deductible I've eaten up. But probably the most 10 relevant frequently asked questions for that month, because they fluctuate depending upon the time of year, and maybe if do you pay for a flu shot, and that's going to be towards the end of the year kind of thing. Is that the type of transactional stuff you're talking about?
It's the exact type of transactional stuff I'm talking about. Basic information that you can get, but there's no need to talk to a rep. And what we found is that if we could eliminate 60% of their calls, and again, it's 4.68 million calls, we could actually save Metropolitan just under $13 million a year. And of course, on a three-year contract is the only way to go. But they can save a ton of money using our queues that will never see the light of day in terms of a newspaper, magazine, or television. So by using them within the corporation with their customers.
So that's kind of like a privatized queue, like a private channel, a private access card, should we say.
Absolutely.
By the way, they're doing the same type of approach at Lincoln Mercury.
Explain that. Tell me how a car company would use that. I mean, are you going to have a queue on your rearview mirror or what?
No. You would have a queue, you know, if you buy a new car from Ford, for example, and the Lincoln Mercury owner gets a owner's card, if you will, they'll have a queue assigned, a queue number assigned to that particular owner. That, like Bill says, you can swipe it with your cat and go right straight to your webpage as an owner of a Lincoln or as an owner of a Mercury. And you can be able to go in and check your maintenance records on your car, be able to go in and schedule your next service call that you want to be able to do. For example, to go in and change your oil, have your 30-mile inspection, whatever it might be. To do all kinds of, and same time be able to provide information to the Lincoln Mercury owners about recalls, warranties, guarantees, things like that. Before you even get to what I call marketing 101, which is putting cues in the owner's manual itself that's in the glove compartment of the car. So we're finding and working with these various companies in corporate America that they're coming up with what I call very cost-saving applications of how to use our technology to save them expense revenue or to provide better service to the consumers,
so
et cetera.
So it's not like selling a corporation on a new technology, because the technology is obvious. Would you agree? It's more like selling the corporation on saving a ton of money.
That's all it is to it. And again, it's just back to cash.
Yeah, that's easy. I mean, where can you spend a few million to save several few million. I mean, that's pretty interesting. And is that kind of the norm of how the business and consumer group approaches corporate America? I mean, are we always saving these corporations money?
Well, there's really just two areas. One is you either save the money or you help them make money. On the car side, Larry Cullen, who runs our car sector, is trying to work with GM to figure out how to increase their sales based on using our cues and our technology to drive people who leave a showroom without buying back to the showroom to close some deals. And in that case, there's about 2.5 million cues involved in that particular project. So we're trying to drive revenues, unlike with Met, where we're trying to actually save the money.
So you said American Airlines, just real quick, is, okay, I understand in an automobile manual, you can swipe it and get information. I can understand on insurance cars. I mean, that makes a tremendous amount of sense to me. I can understand why a corporation may want to do this, especially if we're, like you said, saving them $13 million a year. I mean, that's a significant amount of pocket change. That's not chump change. But American Airlines parts, I mean, I know this, but explain it for our listeners.
Well, let me interrupt you a minute, Jovan. It's more important than just saving that company $13 million. It's the money that we make for digital convergence. It's really the key.
Okay, so if we save somebody $13 million, how much do we make?
The beauty of it is over a three-year contract.
Give me the breakdown, because I know you have, analed these numbers from top to bottom. That's for you other folks that don't know what I mean. That's the wrinkle in the center of the sheet. But explain to me the dynamics of if you landed a big insurance deal, and this is if, okay, and I know you're building your models here and trying to prove this theory out. What would that look like for our company?
Well, basically, as I broke down the Met project, we would have about $35 million invested in that project, and that's primarily the cost of 2.9 million cats, the cost of queues, and the cost.
And again, what you're doing here is you're kind of putting up, this could be a viable way to do something that our company doesn't do. Our company's really good at giving away cats.
Oh, we're getting real
very,
good at that.
Very good at giving away the technology. Now, what you're hypothesizing here is I'm hearing you say, don't give them away, let's sell them. But they don't really know they're being sold them.
Exactly.
Is that it?
Well,
exactly.
I mean, the truth is, we're not selling the cats. We're not selling the technology. We're selling the application that we can use with our technology.
So we're kind of like a cable company, a cable box. They give you the cable box in the home, but it's the monthly fees that actually pay for it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so let's go through some of these hypothetical numbers.
I mean, the good news is America's been buying technology based on applications for years in corporate America. They look at a piece of technology, they understand what it can do for their business. And if the selling company can prove to them that it'll make more than it costs, then they sell the technology. In this case, we would invest about, as I said, $35 million into this project. In terms of what we do is we bundle everything in one. We're not selling them cats. We're not selling them cues. We're just giving them a bundled price and say,
would this be a service sale? You're selling a service.
This would be a service.
Okay.
And what we're doing is we're improving access to the Metropolitan Insurance Company for their policyholders. And for them, they're relieving 60% of the calls on the service center, and that saves them, as I mentioned, about $13 million a year. So on a three-year contract, they're going to save about $39 million, less $7.5 million for the initial cost of distributing the technology to their 2.9 million.
That's getting a convergence kit or cues to all their members.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. Exactly right. Now, we've decided that, and this really is not something that's in a book. We just looked at that and said, gee, if I've got a target of 40 or 50% gross margin on this deal, what do I got to overlay on this thing to get some cash for us? We will end up with about $63 million in revenue for us when we have an out-of-pocket cost of about $35 million.
Now, that's interesting. And again, this is just how you're building your models and your goals for the department to run it on. But let's just take that into the dot-com world for a moment. We hear all the time about companies worth billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars as a dot-com company. But what you just said was $63 million in revenues.
Correct.
And there are tons of companies worth billions that haven't done $63 million of anything other than spending since their inception. And you actually feel that there are the potentials for these types of transactions in a singular corporation.
And this is really just the first deal with this corporation.
It's one application, Joe.
Right. If we can do this right, it is just the first of several applications for our technology. And if we do this right, they'll welcome us back for open arms for application number two or application number three.
Now, I'm to understand correctly here that if you save them money 1 year, you're guaranteed. I mean, with the system working like this, you're really saving them money every year. So it's like make the sale once and then just kind of keep on renewing. Is that right?
That's correct. It's a residual in revenue in the sense that a three-year contract locks them in for 3 years. But keep in mind, this company sells 35,000 additional policies a month. If they buy the first 2.9 million, then we expand that by dropping another 35,000 kits per month and bill them every month, and that just keeps perpetuating the billing cycle beyond the initial 3 years.
Okay. You said you had 15 vertical markets.
Right.
Okay. You know, transportation, manufacturing, etc.
Healthcare.
So now we're going to do the speed period here. Ready? Fire off, if you will. Doesn't matter who chimes up. Give me 10 business applications of where corporations could use Q. You always hear about how you can do it in ads and all this other stuff. And because we talk a lot about that in the corporations, how we first got the technology out here. But give me 10 good business applications for our technology. So take a shot at it, guys.
Well, certainly managing spare parts for warranty purposes in an airline.
You could use it for the owner's manuals within automobiles.
You can use it, as we said, on the back of insurance cards.
You can use it in terms of the more healthcare information, in terms of healthcare services coming from your healthcare provider.
So you get more detailed information.
Right.
You can use it on the front of electronic yellow pages to drive people to the yellow pages.
Oh, that's a good one. Now you don't actually have to just look for the phone number. You can't, because the line's too small, you can't tell if he's Mr. Chizo one-man shop or not, and you can right. swipe it and go to a better site.
Right.
You can use it in prescription bottles, for example, in terms of how to take the prescription and
what not to mix it with.
What not to mix it with, and et cetera, et cetera.
Don't drink and drive heavy machinery.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or don't drink and drive heavily or something
right.
like that. You can, anytime you're looking for information on a warranty of something you bought.
Oh, back of a warranty card.
Sure.
That's good. That's good.
You could use it in terms of what they call medical compliance, in terms of taking your prescriptions and reporting back to the healthcare company that you've been taking your prescriptions.
Oh, that's actually prescribed. Good, because every time you swipe your queue, if you took the medication or you had to check in for a medication,
exactly.
and you swipe the queue, it actually reports back to the server that you did it, and it's like a checks and measure thing. I'll give you one here. That's like distributing an employee manual on sexual harassment inside a corporation. You put a queue in it. It's given to the person at their desktop, and when they get to the last page, they have to swipe it, or they put a queue on every page, and you have to swipe your way through it, and they've got a digital signature that you went through the entire manual, and it's on permanent records. So that's 9. One more, Bill. Last one.
I must say, sexual harassment was the first thing I thought of when we came in here today. the last one could be, for example, you buy a new piece of equipment, let's say a computer, and you want to register it, and you register it online. Well, instead of going through that whole process of putting in all the detail, you just swipe it away, and they've got the information as to what the kit is, and you can download updated software.
So, Blaine, you talked about, and you said Bill would comment on it, well, either one of you chime in, about American Airlines putting queues on airplane parts. Explain that.
Well, for example, we met with American Airlines, and we start to talk about how much money they lose because they're constantly repairing and replacing parts, and they have no clue whether that particular part is under warranty or not. And all they know is they're spending literally hundreds of millions of dollars in that process. We're able to tag a part, and frankly, we can't tag every part, but we can tag a lot of parts. And they can give you an example. Even something as large as an engine housing, you simply tag that engine housing, swipe it, go to the record for all the parts within that engine housing. And suddenly you find out if there's four different fans in an engine housing, they can say fan A, B, C, D, and each fan is then recorded. They have when they installed it, when the warranty runs out, what repairs have been done. And suddenly a mechanic, instead of looking at it, tossing it out and putting in a new fan because he knows he needs one and he doesn't have a clue when that fan was bought and installed, he can look at it and say, oh, this is a warranty repair. We're going to send that back to Boeing. And all of a sudden, we can begin to chip into that hundreds of millions of dollars that they've been losing on warranty repair. Definitely not sexy, definitely not exciting, but definitely a money winner for American and for us.
See, I like that because you save them $100 million. I would certainly say, hey, great, I'd take 5% of that or 10% of that to save you that much. I mean, it didn't take a fool to – even my toothless relatives can figure out the math on that one real easy, right? And you're right. I mean, that – it's rock solid. It makes business sense. I mean, this is big business sense, but it's not sexy. I mean, you know, I like the fact of watching a cube pop across a CNN or showing up in a Forbes or a Time magazine. That's sexy. And this one is, you know, what am I going to do? I can imagine myself on American Airlines, and I'm going to go to the little closet they call a toilet, and I get turbulence and I fall down and I look up under the lid and go, damn, there's a cube there.
There you have it.
I mean, that's certainly not very sexy, but...
But if you had a wireless cross scanner with our technology in it... I could
go back to my seat and I could find everything I wanted to know about that toilet lid.
And you could order one for home.
So, off the subject. Bill, what would you tell brand new employees the most exciting thing about digital convergence is, and what should they know about the company or be excited about?
I think what they should definitely be excited about are two things. One is we are introducing a technology to the marketplace that dramatically changes the internet and how people use the internet, and that we are creating applications for this technology that will further that change throughout American industry and beyond. And number two, not to beat a dead horse, but there's $100 a share price out there somewhere, and we're going to figure out how to get there.
That's a good goal. So I'm glad you can say that, because I can. Anyway, Blaine, what would you tell new employees? Two great things about the company that they should know or think about.
I would think one of the most important things they need to understand is our technology can be applied across anything in the marketplace. It's not peculiar to a particular geographical area. It's not peculiar to any particular industry. It doesn't make any difference what industry, where you are in the world, or wherever you want to apply it to. Our technology can be utilized. We're only limited by our creativity. We talked about being an enabler for our customers, enabling our customers to save money, make money through the various applications that we're using. Secondly, and most importantly, I would talk about the leadership at Digital Convergence. I've been in a lot of corporations in my life in 30 years, and I think we have the most impressive roster of executives and management people on board at Digital Convergence, and that everybody understands what our focus is and how we want to make it happen. That's very unique for us. Most companies at our stage have young, inexperienced people trying to run the company, trying to build it into a billion-dollar company, and it just doesn't happen. I think you pointed that out earlier when you said, you know, most companies haven't even made a profit. And there have been, like, take eBay, et cetera, and Amazon.com, et cetera. Those companies are not making money. We can make money in the second year out and substantial money if we are able to go about doing the application approach that we talk about. Bill and I are comfortable with this because we've done it for 30 years. We've seen it work. I don't care whether you call it value-added selling, consultative selling, cost-justified selling. It's all the same, what I call basic blocking and tackling to make sure the customer sees the value in using our technology to either make money or save money. So that's the most important message I would want to get across to the people within the company.
Thacker, what excites you most about our company personally?
What excites me the most mm-hmm. is the opportunity that we have to go out, and several people have said it, and that is to make our imprint on the marketplace itself. As you know personally, Giovanni, I've been looking for over 10 years for the right vehicle in order to go out, number one, make a lot of money for everybody involved, and number two, to be recognized for the contribution that we make to the marketplace. And that's really exciting to me at my stage in my career and at my age.
If you were offering someone that was either in management or looking to get into management or looking to move up the ranks in this company, because I've as I said before, you know, here we are, 200 people, be great to be 20,000 people. I can't wait till we're 60,000 people. And if you take the simple dynamic math, what I call of management, and if management's 10% of the entire troops at 20,000 people, there's 2,000 managers, there's only 200 of us. So I call those the leaders of tomorrow, the people who are going to move up. Bill, advice for management. What would you give?
The best advice I could give is stay focused, watch the financial performance, and shoot straight. I think we have got to shoot straight among our own team. Clear communications, partnership, teamwork, that'll push this company forward. We're much, much stronger together than we are with a lot of individual organizations.
Absolutely. And Thacker, what would you say for someone looking to move up, move in, a new executive? What would be your advice?
My advice basically is that you've got to be straightforward, as Bill points out, with each other. The enemy's on the outside. We're working on the inside to make things happen. And if we don't operate as a team, we're going to get beat on the outside in the competitive world. We think we have, and we know we have, more importantly, a competitive advantage right now in the marketplace. But very quickly, as several companies have found in the past, somebody could come around the corner that we don't even know is out there today and overcome us and take over the marketplace and put us out of business.
It's interesting. I was talking about that with someone earlier today is, you know, back in the early 90s, it was Prodigy.
Right.
And AOL was just a blip, and AOL took over and dominated the world right from under them and just drove Prodigy in the dirt. And I believe you're right, teamwork. I mean, this is a team thing, isn't it? As I've said, from servers to secretaries to executives to engineers, it takes every single one of us working together in unison, working hard to make this go. I said it on another tape. We're a Ferrari. But a Ferrari goes nowhere without gas. It's just a hump of shiny metal. I'm here to be a race car, to burn it up, to set records, to make it happen, to change the world. And you're right. The number one thing, I believe, is teamwork. And with great teamwork comes unparalleled conviction for what we do. You know, I get excited walking through the offices and shaking hands and talking to everybody to see everybody just absolutely stoked about what we do and the applications for it and how they feel proud that, hey, I'm part of this company and we're doing something big. Blaine, in closing, I want you just to explain a little bit more on that phase four, on that pull. Give me a little clearer definition of pull, and how will we know when we've gotten to phase four?
Well, we'll know we've gotten to phase four when we see substantial business-to-business applications being implemented throughout corporate America, in my opinion. Again, it's going to be the consumers, it's going to be the companies, the corporations themselves that are going to be able to help us identify the applications, to use our technology to their advantage. And it's going to be our measurement is nothing more than what, as Bill points out, is nothing more than the financial return that we as a corporation receive for working with them from a business-to-business perspective. To me, when I say pull, I'm talking about using our technology, demanding that our technology be used and be available to them as they go about doing their day-to-day business operations. To me, that's the only way to measure success. We can roll out internationally, which is, of course, the final phase when we start blowing out what we've learned here in the United States. But right now, we've got to make it work here. And we start with Dallas, Texas, and the rollout in September in Dallas, with the rollout with Forbes, and with the rollout with Wired. We've all got to focus on making that accomplished. And as a team, when we talk about teamwork, Jovan, I talk about playing your position. If my responsibility is to play first base, by God, I'm going to play first base, and I expect Bill to play third if that's his area of responsibility. We can't be worrying about what's going on with the second baseman or with the shortstop or the left fielder. It's real easy to criticize how they're playing or fielding the ball, as I say, when you're playing first base and you're watching the guy in left field. It's just not positive. It's not a focus that I think we should dwell on. I think it's more important that we look at focusing on playing our own position.
It's interesting. I was going to suggest that because I would say, with all the people listening to this tape, and we did that little drill of coming up with 10 uses for cues in corporations, I would say here's, and somebody said it the best, and it was Doug Davis that said this. It said, it's really, really easy to be a critic. It's much harder to be an author. And here's maybe a good chance to be an author, is you're out there in the field, no matter what your position is, you probably have some great ideas of how corporations can use our technology. And this doesn't matter if you're the guy that runs around the office packing the boxes in the supply hut. Every one of us have brilliant ideas in us. We haven't thought of them all. We need all of our 200 minds thinking about how we use our technology. So here's a challenge. Become an author. It's easy to be a critic. That's a shortcut. Become an author. Think of how we win. Think of how we reach our goals. And think of how we can use our technology inside corporations or to make life easier. Send them to me, Jovan at Digital Convergence, real easy, and send me your ideas, and I'll distribute them amongst the groups. But that's the challenge of the day. Become an author. I would love to see one, two, your top 10 maybe, ideas of how we implement our technology. Because I bet looking around your home or looking around your cubicle or thinking about the companies you worked for in the past is you could actually be part of the solution. And I absolutely love people that offer solutions. That's a winner. People who offer solutions. So let's see what we can find with that. Bill, parting words for the troops, what would you say?
Well, parting words is, if you think it, say it. If you feel it, do it. But just get it done.
Very good. Thacker, parting words?
What I call ready, fire, aim. We can't really play the game like everybody else does. We can't get ready. We can't aim and then fire. If we do, we miss the window. We've got to take action. And as I've always said, I want you to swing that bat. And if you got it on your shoulder, swing it. Don't strike out with the bat sitting on your shoulder. Just take some action and we'll move forward as a team.
It's interesting is because here we are in a critical time, getting the launch done. We've got to think about our future and where we're headed. We've got to play to win to make this happen. We've got to be convicted by what we do. We've got to be on fire for what we do. We have to accept no shortcuts. We have to accept no complaining. All we can accept is do it well, come up with solutions, make it happen. Because if you make it happen for yourself, you're making it happen for all of us. And it takes each and every one of us to build Digital Convergence into the massive corporation that it's destined and deserves to be. I'm serious, folks. Send me your input. Let me know how you think these tape series are going. Give me ideas for the things you need to hear about to help you understand what we do better and see the vision of the future we are most certainly going to create. And you just may be sitting here with me next time sharing that vision. We love you.